Yo, what's good, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of the Isaiah Kid Podcast. Welcome back. We're back full in effect. I know it's been about a week and a half, maybe even close to 2 weeks since I have recorded and dropped the episode. I was finishing up my college finals, you know, it's final season, so had to finish that out, bang that out, whatever, but we're back full in effect. Obviously, there'll be more NBA playoff content coming to you guys. Obviously, we have some more guests come on and so forth. Hope you guys run that last episode back as much as you guys can. I know we're in round two, in the middle of round two. So obviously, there'll be more NBA content to come out and come soon. But I had some football stuff I wanted to get to. I wanted to talk about Jared Goff's contract. I wanted to talk about Deion Sanders and Colorado and what they have going on this offseason or thus far so far. So let's get into it. Let's not waste any time. I hope you guys are ready. I am ready. But you know how we started off. First and foremost, I'm your humble and highly favorite host, Isaiah Kidd of the Isaiah Kidd Podcast. Shouts out to everyone that is listening. Shouts out to the new listeners. Shouts out to the new followers. Hey, as I always tell everybody, if you are new or even if you have been listening to me just casually, make sure whatever platform that you use, whether it be Spotify, Apple, etc., you make sure you follow the pod. So you can get notifications when the pod drops. And if you feel friendly, feel generous, leave a comment, leave a question. If you're curious, leave a question. And that is the easiest way to be a part of the show. So let's get into it. And I saw the NFL schedule. Some of the big time games were released. The schedule was released. That's obviously a lot of that, you know. NFL junkies, the NFL is just king, right? But we had a big-time contract extension and Jared Goff contract. And I think Jared Goff and just how his career has played out in this latest contract extension, I think it is truly a testament that success – No matter how you deem it or however you deem success, it's not always linear, right? Success comes in different shapes and forms. And I think I've talked about this before in my pod, but I think Jared Goff, just looking at his career or just the evolution of his career, he's an example of that. You know, he's an example that certain people grow at certain rates. And as I said, success is not always linear, and it shouldn't always be judged by linear. Now, not every player is just Patrick Mahomes, right, or Ja'Marr Chase, where the moment they step on the field, they like, you could tell, like, okay, like, this guy is the best player. Like, not every player, you know, Mahomes, he obviously he sat his rookie year, but Mahomes' first year as a starter, he came in and threw 50 touchdowns and almost guided the Chiefs to the AFC Championship, right? And ever since then, he has been on this crazy all-time, greatest of all-time trajectory that we are now, like, that we're, like, in the midst of watching. Not every player is going to be on that type of trajectory, you know? Not every player is going to start off like a CJ Stroud where, you know, he has one of the best rookie seasons ever, and he leads his Texans team, who a lot of us didn't have as a playoff team. All of a sudden, they're a playoff team, and all of a sudden, you look around, the Houston Texans are floating around in AFC, you know, AFC contender talk just after year one. Not every player grows at the same rate. Some guys, it takes the right situation. Some guys, it takes the right coach. Some guys, it takes the right team. And Goff is a good example of this. I think some people tend to forget that he was the number one overall pick in the 2016 draft. He was the number one overall pick. And I have always had respect for Jared Goff. I mean, his rookie year was a complete disaster under Jeff Fisher. complete disaster. And after his rookie year, I'm old enough to remember that there was rumblings and some people, there was some trepidation that Jared Goff probably is, like, some people second question, like, is this guy really the number one overall pick? Should he have been the number one overall pick? Can this guy really be a starting quarterback at the NFL level, much less a franchise quarterback? And then in comes this young, hotshot offensive coach. You guys may know him. He goes by the name of Sean McVay. And it completely changes the ecosystem of the Rams and Jared Goff. Their fortunes change forever, right? Right? But Goff has proved immediately since his time with Sean McVay and now what we have seen his output in Detroit, he has proved that he is a really good quarterback. But also, not just him being a really good quarterback, him being productive and putting up numbers. He doesn't have much sizzle to his game, right? He doesn't have the most entertaining, most exciting game, but great pocket passer. He has a really good, I think he has a really underrated, but really good deep ball thrower. He's a really good deep ball thrower. But also, what we have to come to the terms with, if you put a team good, like if you put him on a really good team, he can win and he can do a lot with that. Like that's the type of player that Jared Goff is. He has shown not only is he a productive quarterback, a really good quarterback, a quarterback that can put up really good numbers, but he's a guy, if you construct your roster appropriately, if you put your team together, and if your team is well put together like the Rams were, like the Lions currently are constructed, you can win big with Jared Goff. You can't say that for a lot of quarterbacks around the league. You know, obviously, outside of the top tier, the high-end guys like Mahomes, Josh Allen, Burrow, Lamar, right? Outside of the top five or six guys, you can't say that for a lot of quarterbacks. Tua Tagovailoa, you can't confidently say, hey, you can win playoff games with Tua Tagovailoa. You know why? Because you haven't. You can't say that for Kirk Cousins. You can't say it. I might ruffle some feathers here, but you can't say it for guys like Trevor Lawrence. Those guys are ultra talented, right? You know, Herbert and Lawrence, they're ultra talented, but they haven't had merely the success, the January postseason success that Jared Goff has had. Jared Goff has been to a Super Bowl with the Rams. He's won prior to him going to the Super Bowl. He won playoff games as the Rams quarterback, right? There was even one playoff game he had. I think Wofford, the quarterback, the starting quarterback, when Goff had his injury, Sam Wofford got hurt in the right at the beginning of the Seahawks game, playoff game, several years back. This is Jared Goff's last year as a Ram, and Jared Goff, with a thumb injury, came in on the road, beat Seattle in a gutsy playoff performance. But he doesn't get counted for that playoff win because he wasn't the actual starter coming into that game. Right? So I might ruffle some feathers. But he is, like, Jared Goff has had a lot of success, and not just regular season success, but he's had some postseason success. And we cannot say the same for a lot of quarterbacks that we love to boast and talk about, right? And I'm not saying Jared Goff is, he's not going to carry your team, right? He's not going to, occasionally you catch him on the right Sunday, he might have a 400-yard day for four touchdowns. You might catch that from Jared Goff. He can put up some numbers. He can pile it up. But in no means am I saying he's going to carry your team to victory or to a championship. But if you properly construct your roster, we've seen Jared Goff be successful in now two destinations, So, and we can't say that about a lot of quarterbacks who we may think are better than Jared Goff or even at the same level or same tier, however you want to separate it, right? Like I said, no one compares him to Mahomes. No one in their right football mind compares him to Mahomes, Josh Allen, Joe Burrow, Lamar Jackson. No one does that. But outside of that top five or six guys that routinely are in the top five or six, Goff has an edge over a lot of the quarterbacks that we love to talk about. He has the edge, and the edge is, hey, he's won in the postseason. He's won big in the postseason multiple times. I mean, hell, if we're being honest, the Lions probably should have won that game versus the 49ers. They was up 24-3 at halftime. I mean, they probably should have won outside of some coaching blunders. The Lions would have been playing for the Super Bowl last year versus the Chiefs, right? So he's done it twice. And is the extension a little rich? Yeah, quarterbacks are pretty pricey these days, especially good ones, right? Especially really good ones, they're pricey. And I think, you know, ideally in the perfect world, in a utopia, it would be great to get Jared Goff on like a $35 to $38 million per year kind of scale. That would be great. But that's not how it works, right? That's not how it works at the quarterback position. And you're either, I talked about this a couple off seasons ago, where we're getting to a place with these quarterback contracts. You're either highly paid or you're not getting paid anything, or you're on your rookie deal. Like it's one or the other. Right, that there's no middle tier in terms of paying scale for quarterbacks. You're even making upwards north of $40 million, or you're on some type of rookie deal or so forth, or you're not getting paid anything, right? Like, or you're just a bridge guy, right? There's no $25 million. No. You're either north of like 38. Close to 40, or like I said, you're a bridge quarterback, right? Franchises view you as a bridge guy, not long term, or you're on your rookie deal, right? And when you see guys like Kirk Cousins get paid $45 million a year, and he's coming off a torn Achilles, I mean, or you look at contracts like Deshaun Watson, where it's fully guaranteed, right? Won't talk about that. Goff has every right to probably look around and say, well, I'm better than a lot of these guys that's making more than me. So, yeah, he got $170 million guaranteed. And unlike a lot of these other massive quarterback contracts, right, for instance, you take, this is, once again, I might ruffle some feathers, but I'm just speaking the truth. Once again, you look at Jalen Hurts. When the Eagles paid Jalen Hurts after his 2022 year, you know, he had a really good year. Eagles got to the Super Bowl. The Eagles paid him. Cool. Right? But fast forward to the following year in 2023, Jalen Hurts had a pretty shaky 2023. So we're talking about a guy in Jalen Hurts. Like I said, this is nothing against Jalen Hurts, but we have a guy where he had one great year, got the Eagles to the Super Bowl. They paid him following year, was really shaky, really up and down. And all in comparison to Jared Goff, the Lions know that he's not Patrick Mahomes or Josh Allen. They know that. But they know what they're getting. They know they have a guy that's gonna be available, that's there. He can put up some really good numbers. And he's anywhere between the 8th and 10th best quarterback in football. That's what they have. And they know that if we have a good enough team surrounding him, we have a chance to be playing for a championship, just like they did last year. That's what they know. That's what they know. What they're getting with Philly, you know, I'm not gonna put my money on Jalen Hurts over the next 5 years being a superstar quarterback. I'm not. Now, I'm not saying in that same sentiment, I'm not saying Jalen Hurts is just going to completely fall off the earth and he's going to have the worst quarterback contract in the league. No, but we just don't know what we're getting because the track record is up and down. So we don't know what we're getting. When I think of Jared Goff, think of it like in terms of cars. He's not a Mercedes. He's not a Porsche. He's not a Ferrari, right? He's not a BMW, but if he was a car, he would probably be a Ford F-150. Not the most fancy car, not the most fanciest truck, right? Not the coolest truck. It's not a Cadillac, right? But Ford is reliable, and all of you guys listening probably know someone that knows someone that knows someone that has a Ford F-150. And I mean, since I've been living, it's been the number one selling truck since I've been living in my 22 years. So, like, Jared Goff is your go-to fast food restaurant when you don't feel like cooking, when you probably don't feel like doing any fine dining. When you don't feel like cooking or when you don't feel like doing any fine dining, you want to go just pick out your go-to fast food restaurant. That is Jared Goff, right? Wouldn't be necessarily your first couple options, right? You know, he's not, it's not as good of a or satisfying as a fine dining meal, but you know what you're getting with Jared Goff. You know, I like Chick-fil-A. You know, when you go to Chick-fil-A, you know what you're getting, right? You're going to get the waffle fries. You're going to get, I'm more of a tenders kind of nuggets guy. I know a lot of people like their sandwich. Think of it like that. That is Jared Goff. That is Jared Goff. Not a home-cooked meal, right? Nothing hits like a home-cooked meal. He's not a fine dining kind of meal, right? It's not that. He's not that kind of restaurant. But when you just looking for some fast food, it might be late. That is Jared Goff. You know what you're getting. You know what you're getting. I think also in terms of the intangibles, we talk about the intangibles a lot, and in terms, especially at the quarterback position, but also just in football in general. And I think throughout the course of his career, he has shown and displayed really good mental toughness. I mean, his mental toughness, it's on a different level. I mean, we can bring it back to his college days at Cal. Cal was not good in. That was a bad situation. But then you think about his rookie year and the transition from Jeff Fisher to Sean McVay, and then think about how his stint ended with the Rams. It ended poorly with the Rams. Sean McVay, I mean, as outwardly as possible, I mean, he was shitting on Jared Goff. I mean, it was already bad enough that they traded him, but he publicly outed Jared Goff. And then they sent them to Detroit, and I bet a lot of people probably was like, man, yep, there goes Jared Goff, right? And Jared Goff could have easily nailed it in. He already got paid his big-time money, his first big contract. He could have easily just nailed it in and then, you know, could have just packed it in. Even his first year in Detroit wasn't smooth sailing. It was pretty rough. But by the end of year two in Detroit, Jared Goff and the Detroit Lions found themselves out-dueling Aaron Rodgers at Lambeau and effectively ended Aaron Rodgers' career as a Green Bay Packer. That's what Jared Goff was doing at the end of his second year in Detroit. And, you know, the Goff-Stafford trade, it's one of the best win-win trades in recent memory that I can think of. Both sides got what they wanted. the Lions were able to move off of Matthew Stafford, which had to been hard. That had to be difficult because Stafford is an elite talent. Stafford then goes on to the Rams, obviously wins the Super Bowl. The rest is history. The Rams got what they wanted. They got their Super Bowl, right? And then with the Lions and Jared Goff, the Lions could have, this trade could have easily went south, because in a lot of these trades like this where the team with the best player or the team that gives up the best player usually loses, and they usually lose really, really badly. They usually lose the trade really, really badly. No, this trade is win-win. The Lions didn't, like, honestly, you know, they got the draft compensation, which turned into some really high-end guys, right? But then Goff panned out. They got one of the best offensive coordinators in Ben Johnson. Their offensive pieces, and they're really exciting to watch. They're one of the most entertaining teams to watch this past year. And they're gonna be a really good team this upcoming year. They should be. Right? So I know a lot of you guys are probably like, well, Jared Goff, $170 million, $50 million plus dollars a year, that's a lot. Also think, this is my last point. The Lions also probably looked at the landscape of the NFC and was like, well, just list off the best quarterbacks in the NFC. You got Dak. The Lions obviously got one of them in Jared Goff. Brock Purdy, Jordan Love, right? Like those, Jalen Hurts, those are the best quarterbacks in the NFC. When you look at the AFC, it's a gauntlet, right? You got Mahomes, you got Josh Allen, you got Lamar, CJ Stroud, Herbert, Lawrence, Burrow, right? That is just a gauntlet. And you look at the AFC, that is where most of the high-end, elite, top-end quarterbacks are. That's the conference that they usually play in. So the Lions effectively can look at Jared Goff and be like, well, versus Dak, versus Kirk, versus Brock Purdy, versus Jordan Love. You know, obviously you got some young guys like Caleb Williams, Jaden Daniels. You know, they're rookies with some high upside, whatever. But the Lions can look at their guy and be like, our guy can go toe-to-toe with any guy in the conference. And they're not wrong. He can. He can. So I think this extension, I mean, I know a lot of people, like I said, I know a lot of people are probably like, wow, Jared Goff, $50+ million, $170 million guaranteed. Yes. But this is the time we live in. And also, he's a really good quarterback. And if I'm the Lions, like the Dolphins at this point, given what we know about Tua, they can't pay Tua that type of money for multiple reasons. They can't pay Tua that type of money. First, the availability, but then also Tua, are we sure he can go toe-to-toe with Patrick Mahomes and Josh Allen and CJ Stroud and Joe Burrow and Lamar Jackson? Are we sure? Are we sure in a big-time playoff game he can do that? And the Dolphins aren't. That's why they haven't paid him yet. The Lions situation is a little bit different. I'm happy for Jared Goff. Big time. This is the second big time contract he got. You know, down the road, you know, as the Lions, you know, if they get better, and they do have a lot of high end players on their squad, that are currently on rookie deals. But as those guys get older, and you know, their payday is soon to come. Maybe the $50 million, you know, maybe this contract extension looks a little funny on the books. But right now in the NFL, it's a right now league, right? The NFL, a lot of people joke about it stands for not for long, right? So it's right now. And Jared Goff right now, his extension makes a lot of sense. All right, so let's shift gears. I wanted to talk really not too much in depth, but I wanted to talk about Coach Prime and Colorado and what they have going on. More so their approach. Because I think it's a really unique approach that they're taking. Now with the transfer portal, cycle for the spring closing up and as it's ended, you know, a lot of eyes have been, I mean, since Coach Prime has taken the Colorado job, there's been a lot of eyes on the Buffs. I mean, Deion Sanders is polarizing. He's as polarizing as it gets in the sport, especially with, you know, no Nick Saban, no Jim Harbaugh. Like, Coach Prime, even with those guys, with those two guys, I mean, he's still polarizing. But now, like, there's so many eyes on what Colorado is doing, how are they going to look this upcoming season, and so forth. And they have a huge platform. So people recently have been taking some shots at CU and Deion, and he's responded. Even Shador has responded to some of the critics. And I know a lot of people, like I said, I think on the topic of Colorado, I think that it's very much divided, right? I think it's very much divided. And, you know, I think some people don't like the idea of how Deion and his coaching staff have gone about making some of these moves and cutting players. But I must say this, Coach Prime was very much upfront about how he was going to handle Colorado's football program when he first got there, when he first got the job. It didn't take long. Now, at this point, college football has become semi-pro football, right? In a sense. It's become semi-pro football in a sense with the takeover of the NIL and the transfer portal, where players are essentially free to go any and everywhere as they feel such. They bank in, they make a lot of money. So the flip side to that, or the other side to that coin, is when you're treated like a pro and college football and college athletics is treated like semi-pro athletics, the other side to that is cutthroat business, right? Cutthroat business. That's just what happens. We see it all the time in the NFL. We see it all the time in the NBA, where teams, general managers, owners, coaches have no problem moving off of certain players, right? Like, we see it all the time. Sean Payton, Russell Wilson, that whole dynamic of relationship, highly talked about. A lot of people did not agree with the way how Sean Payton handled business and handled Russell Wilson. But guess what? He's a pro. And we can argue all day if it's right or if it's wrong, or should someone be able to do that. That's just how it works, right? So in college athletics, I think a lot of people, and I'm not anti-NIL or anti-transfer portal. No, I'm pro those things. I'm for those things. I just want people to also understand, I want collegiate athletes to understand, okay, with NIL in one hand and the transfer portal in one hand, you having these abilities and these ranges, you know, this is you operating as a pro in many instances. So the flip side to that is, hey, you are very much susceptible to being done dirty in business. It's just how it goes, right? So when he first took the job and he announced that he was going to Colorado, his presence, he did not waver on what his approach would be. Now I have some numbers pulled up, and I would say they're pretty staggering. So in his recruiting class, this includes recruiting and transfer portal. In 2023, his 2023 class, he brought in 72 guys in one cycle. Mind you, you only get 85 scholarships. Well, the following year, this year, 44 of those guys are gone. That is that's 61%. So just a year later, and these are not guys, like I said, these are not guys that he inherited from the last regime. No. These are all guys that he recruited. These are all of his guys that he brought in. 72 guys, 44 of them are gone. So not just, and so in just a year matter of time, he's lost 61% of the initial guys that he brought in. And he brought in 72 guys. 10 out of the 21 were recruits and they're gone. And the two highest ranked guys he had, they left as well. So this seems like an experiment. This seems there's very little continuity. And I will say this about Coach Prime. He makes no, like, he doesn't apologize. He's him through and through. And I have no problem with that at all. I have no problem with that at all. But I do think the transfer portal, and I'm not saying Coach Prime and Colorado's approach is the right way to go or the wrong way to go. No. But I do think in this modern time, in this day and age in college football, the transfer portal, I think, is a really good tool and necessity to use. I think it's a really good tool and asset to use. Do I think it's the end all be all? No. But I do look at certain programs like a Clemson and Dabo Sweeney where they just completely refuse to use the transfer portal. I'm not in favor of that. I just don't think in 2024 and 2025 in college football setting, I don't think that works. I don't think you can just completely ignore the transfer portal. I don't. Now, I can also argue you don't have to be like Clemson and Dabo Sweeney, but I don't think the transfer portal, you could just go in the transfer portal and just try to build your whole roster to the transfer portal. I don't think that's gonna be effective either, right? Clemson, by the way, I'm mentioning Clemson because the transfer portal, like I said, the transfer portal just closed and they had zero players from the transfer portal. I that's a whole nother conversation for a whole nother day that we can get into, right? But with Colorado, like I said, I'm not, their whole approach is essentially building through the transfer portal, right? And I don't know if that is the way to go. I even look at a team like Ole Miss, where I think Ole Miss has a really, really good shot. I think they have a good chance of being a playoff team, but not only a playoff team. I think Lane Kiffin thinks this is a really good opportunity for them to win a national championship this year because of all what they have done in the transfer portal, yes, but they have also recruited pretty well as well. So we'll see how it works out, right? And a lot of people, like a lot of you guys have, like you guys have asked me, you guys have left some comments, some questions concerning, well, how is Colorado going to do this year in the Big 12? The Big 12, I know a lot of people probably probably whiff at the Big 12 this year. I frequently get asked who's going to win the Big 12, or I frequently get asked how is Colorado going to do in the Big 12. And I'll say this, I'm not here to make no bold predictions on May 14th about Colorado and their fate in the Big 12 this year. I'm not going to do it right now, but I will say this. People may scoff and may whiff at the Big 12 because there's no Texas, there's no more Oklahoma, right? So the conference, people are looking at the conference like, whatever. I'm telling you, this conference is going to be one of, if not the most competitive conference out of the Big Four, the Power Four. I'm not saying it's going to be the best conference. I'm not saying it's going to have the most playoff teams. I'm not saying it's going to have the most high-end teams. But from top to bottom, it has a really good chance at being the most competitive conference out of the Power Four that we have from top to bottom. Because you know what? Every week is going to be a dogfight, and this could be extremely challenging for Colorado because those programs within the conference, within the Big 12, have steady programs. They actually have continuity, right? And they know that they're not landing a boatload of blue chipper guys. They're not landing 4 and 5 star guys. They don't have the high-end day one or day two NFL draft kind of talent on their roster. They know that. Kansas State know that. Iowa State knows that, right? Texas Tech knows that. Utah knows that. All of these programs know who they are. They have a culture, but they're centered around developing guys as a core collective. So for their lack of, like I said, for their lack of like first round talent, NFL talent that they may not have on their roster, they have more than learned to how to make up for that deficit. They know these type of programs, the Utahs of the world, the Kansas States of the world, the Iowa States of the world, they know how to make up for that deficit. Oklahoma State, time and time again, they may not have, you know, first rounders all over the place. They may not have future NFL Pro Bowlers just roaming their roster, but they do have guys that have been well developed. This is year 3, year 4, year 5 for college football for them. They're a core collective. They have culture. So with Colorado, it's kind of the opposite. Colorado's an orange in a basket full of apples, where a lot of these programs, they're not finishing top 20, top 25 in recruiting, right? They don't have a bunch of NFL guys, but they got good coaching. They're well coached. They're buttoned up. They're mature. They got a culture. So we'll see what happens with Colorado. It'll be a really good test, right? You know, all of these steady programs, you know, that's built off of culture and continuity and developing, right? Like Utah is probably one of the more underrated programs in college football. Like, you know, Utah doesn't have a bunch of NFL Pro Bowlers. They don't have a bunch of NFL first round guys, but Kyle Whittingham has his Utes ready to play each and every Saturday. And you know, in the Pac-12, when they were beating up on USC, they were beating up on Oregon. They were beating up on these programs that get NFL guys. Oregon, USC, they get NFL guys. They're the programs that get the first rounders, the second rounders. They're the programs that get them. Utah beating up all on them. Because Utah culture, continuity, Kyle Whittingham has his guys ready to go. Oklahoma State, you know, I mean, granted, it's not Oklahoma, but it's the reason why they're able to just sneak in. It seems like Oklahoma State just always sneaks into the Big 12 championship, right? It's the reason why. I'm telling you guys, Big 12, you may scoff at it. Like I said, I'm not saying they're going to have the best teams. I'm not saying they're going to have multiple or the most playoff teams. No, it'll probably just be one playoff team. And it'll probably be the winner of the conference, right? That'll be their only playoff team. But from top to bottom, it's going to be a dogfight. And they're going to be scrapping like hell every week. I'm telling you, every week of Big 12 play, they're going to be they're going to be scrapping like hell, and Colorado better be mentally tough and mentally ready. They better be mentally ready for what's happening. Like I said, it's not, and they don't have the easiest schedule. You look at Colorado's schedule, they don't have the easiest conference schedule. So, you know, we will learn a lot about how Colorado's approach works, and how effective it is in a conference like the Big 12. We'll see. I'm going to wrap this bad boy up. I just wanted to talk about those two topics. Thought I'd give you guys some content. I'll be back really soon with some more NBA playoff content. Always remember, two choices, one decision. Your boy is out. Thank you for listening. Continue to tap in. Make sure you follow the pod. Make sure you leave a like if you can. Make sure, or leave a review if you want to, you know. Easiest way to be on the show, easiest way to get involved in the show is to leave a comment or question. I answer questions, I answer comments pretty frequently on the show. So be sure to do that. I tap in with you guys later. Peace.